Okay, this coming Shabbos, we're going to have the honor and privilege of enjoying Parshas Chukas. The Torah tells us, Zos Chukas HaTorah, this is the Chok of the Torah, and the commentaries all ask why the wording should be Zos Chukas HaTorah, this is the Chok of the Torah. Why don't you simply state Zos Chukas HaParah, this is the story of the Parah Aduma? What does it have to do with Chukos HaTorah? So Rav Gedaliah Shor Zatzal explains that within every single mitzvah, there is an outstanding characteristic that is apparent, albeit in smaller scale, in other mitzvos as well. So, for instance, there is a certain aspect of tefillin within each one of the other mitzvos. There is a certain aspect of the mitzvah of Karban Pesach within each of the other mitzvos. It's most prominent in Karban Pesach. It's most prominent in tefillin, but it is apparent in all the other mitzvos as well. So here, what's apparent with the mitzvah of Parah Aduma is the idea of chok. There's no apparent reason for this mitzvah. But even by other mitzvos, explains Rav Shor, although the reasons for the other mitzvos are provided, a person needs to know that there are aspects, even by those other mitzvos, that will not be understood by human intellect. That does not mean that we don't keep the mitzvah, which is a common misconception that many of us have. Even if I don't understand it, amarti achakma, I said I will do my best to understand it, but still at the basis, I understand that it's far away from me. The Torah continues, Zos HaTorah, Adam ki amus ba'ohel. This is the Torah when a person dies in a tent. And the Gemara in Brachas notes that Ein Divrei Torah miskaimen ela b'misha mei misatzmo aleim. The Divrei Torah can only survive among those who are willing to die over them, which is an inherent contradiction in of itself. If you're willing to die, then where are the Divrei Torah going to survive? How can Divrei Torah survive on something that's dead? So Rav Meir Shapiro Zatzal, the famous Lublina Rav, the founder of the Daf Yomi movement, explained that the references here are those that are to one who's involved in chinuch. Lest a person think that as a result of a person's need, the Rebbe or the Mora's need to stop his or her own spiritual growth in order to educate others, lest one think that they are spiritually dying. This is not so. The Torah is best when it's chozer alachsanya shalo. Mechanchim are the best examples. The Torah is best when the Torah is repeating itself on those who make themselves into a home of Torah, those who make themselves a host of Torah. And so therefore, especially now as we're getting to the point of the end of the school year, we need to turn to our Rebbe and we need to turn to our Moras and our teachers and our Rabbanim and say to them, listen, you know what, I thank you. I thank you for putting yourself on the side sometimes in order to be able to grow. This may explain the famous statement, Mi Talmidai Yoser Mikulam. That's that we pointed out in Pirkei Avos last week, that I learned a lot from my teachers, but I learned the most from my students, because, of course, the students provide the best example. And while we're on the subject, let me add another thought. The Torah is often compared to Mayim. When Mayim flows, it's so powerful that it can break down mountains and it can shatter obstructions. When water freezes, it can't do anything. And the same can be said for Torah life, and especially for through the lives of those who are teaching it. When it's alive, it flows, it can overcome all obstacles. But when it's left alone on the shelves, it's limited, and it gets frozen over. And so therefore we have a responsibility to get up and make sure that the Torah is a Torah's Chaim, and that it is no sale. Of course, when the water rushes downward is when it's at its greatest strength. And so therefore, when we teach those who know less than we, even if it's in a small aspect, we need to understand that we are really developing our own strength through the strength of Torah. In the middle of the parasha, we, of course, go through the experience with Moshe, Aaron, and Bnei Yisrael of the sin of Mei Merivah. And we're told, of course, overtly, the obvious sin was that Moshe came along, Vayachas HaSela, he hit the rock. Now, why was Moshe Rabbeinu deserving of such an intense punishment over here? He did something wrong. Just to be denied the opportunity to enter the land of Israel for making a small mistake? So, of course, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky Zatzal suggests that this was necessary. Moshe Rabbeinu digressed from the literal instruction of Hashem here. And he put the entire belief system of Moshe Emes V'Sarasso Emes in peril. And so therefore, Hashem had to be strict with him. Hashem had to tell him, hey, listen, Moshe, you've got a problem over here. Because so much of our faith is built upon the power of Nevuah and the fact that you are a man of truth, and here you kind of bent the truth to a certain degree. That's a much more serious matter than just simply hitting the rock. So, of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes ahead and exacts the punishment on Aaron, and Aaron is called to task, and Aaron dies. But, of course, the people don't know about that. And so, therefore, they wait for Moshe to come down. And then when the people saw that Aaron had died, and Rashi cites the Medrash, which explains that the people didn't believe that Moshe Rabbeinu, that Aaron had died, until after Moshe davened to Hashem to ask Hashem to show mercy. And then at that point in time, so then the Malachim showed Aaron, a Kohen, and a Mita having passed away. When they saw, the Medrash explains, when they saw Aaron rising, so then they believed. Now the Medrash that Rashi cites actually goes a step further and suggests that the people are getting ready to stone Moshe Rabbeinu over Aaron HaKohen's death. Did they really think that they killed him? Did they really think that Aaron HaKohen was going to live on forever? What was their problem over here? So Rabbi Ganak Shalita once pointed out to us that the people knew that Aaron had passed. The problem was they couldn't believe it. They didn't know how they were going to be able to go on. And for that, one needs to constantly seek out his master, to know that in their souls that they would need to take over. Rabbi Ganak, I think at the time, told us that when Rav Moshe Soloveitchik heard that Rav Chaim passed away, so he sat Shiva first. But after he sat Shiva, he got up and he went to go back to actually go check out to see his father's kever. So along the way, he stopped in Radin, and or he was passed right around Radin, and the Chafetz Chaim sent his son-in-law to go stop Rav Moshe Soloveitchik and ask him why he's traveling and what he's doing. And so Rav Moshe Soloveitchik told Rav Levinson, the Chafetz Chaim's son-in-law, that the truth is that there's one thing to know, there's another thing to see and to understand. And so when he brought the message back to the Chafetz Chaim said he understood, and he told him to go further. This is one of the challenges that exists in our life. Sometimes we can't know everything, and sometimes we have to believe. But sometimes there's a understanding that comes when we know something intellectually, and we follow through halakhically, we can't hold back. But at the same point in time, in order to be able to make a reckoning, sometimes we have to see it. It was when the people challenged Moshe, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu responded by sending the copper snakes, we're told that whoever was bitten, if they turned up and looked up at the snake, v'chai, they were able to live. Now usually when we find the word v'haya, v'haya usually is an expression of joy. V'ayihi is an expression of danger, and v'haya is actually an expression of joy. Now, v'haya kol ha'anoshuch, where's the joy in being bitten by a snake? And by the way, so what? So they complained about the man. What was the big deal? So Rav Chaim Yaakov Govich, Zecher Tzadok Livracha, explained that the sin of Bnei Yisrael was that they couldn't accept their reliance on Hashem. The problem that they had with the man was not the man, it was the fact that they didn't want their dependence to be blatantly obvious. But that was the error. Realizing that when you rely on Hashem, your needs are taken care of, allows your relationship with Hashem to grow. There's reason for the great satisfaction in having an ongoing relationship with Hashem. And this is what the Kutzker Rebbe points out, was the curse of the Nachash. It was as if Hashem said, here's your food, don't bother me anymore. We want to have HaKadosh Baruch Hu bothered by us. We want Him to have a relationship with us. That only happens when we realize that we are dependent on Him. And that's true in other relationships as well. Our relationships grow stronger when we realize that we depend on one another. If spouses would wake up and realize that, that it's okay to be dependent on one another, that it's good to be dependent on one another, we would actually, to a certain degree, within limitation, manage to appreciate one another, insofar as when a couple is in a certain difficulty, part of the greatest thing that a couple can do for one another is be makir tov. And that's not only a marital couple, friendships and communities, etc. The Torah then goes on and tells us the story of the Shiras HaBe'er. Al-Keni Amar B'Sefer Melchamos HaShem Esvohi B'Sufo. Therefore, it's written in the Sefer Melchamos HaShem. Rav Shechter used to talk to us about Sefer Melchamos HaShem. He says that there is a need for debate and occasional sharpness when people are learning. Because in order to grow in terms of learning, one needs to have a bit of chutzpah. One needs to have a Sefer Melchamos, a battle Sefer. But if one does not learn when to battle and when not to battle, it can become a problem in life. Not everything needs to have a fight with it. And that's the Torah style. The Torah style in the Sefer Vachamos Hashem was Vahavis Sufo, to get to the point of being loving to one another at the end. That's part of what everyone has to deal with. That's part of the goal that exists within the Sefer Machamos Hashem. That was the description that was given of the B'nai Mir when they were on their way to Shanghai, and they were on the train, and the people described the people when the books were open, they were at each other's throats, and then once the book was closed, all of a sudden they were no longer in that same situation. They were loving to one another. Az Yashir Yisrael as Hashira Azos. Then the Jews sang the Shira. And now, of course, as opposed to the last Shira, this time it's not Moshe v'nei Yisrael. When it was the famous Az Yashir, it was Az Yashir Moshe v'nei Yisrael. Why isn't it the same over here? So Rabbi Frand Shalita suggested that while the people finally realized Az Yashir, that the bear was a merit because of Miriam, Moshe Rabbeinu knew it all along. It would have been improper to assume that it was Oz Yashir Moshe. It was at that moment Moshe sang. Moshe had been thankful and had offered Hakaras HaTov HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'schus Miriam the entire time that the Be'er was there. It was the people who woke up at that moment in time. Rabbi Bernhard Weinberger Zatzal, the famous Rav of Williamsburg, he suggested that when the people left Mitzrayim, they did not know the intricacies of singing Shira. Moshe Rabbeinu had to teach it to them at that point in time, and thus it's Moshe uvnei Yisrael, Az Yashir Moshe uvnei Yisrael. But after 40 years in the desert, right, the people did know how to sing, and so therefore Moshe didn't need to lead them in Shira. It was just Az Yashir Yisrael. Finally, this coming week we will read the Haftorah from the book of Shoftim, where we read all about Yiftach HaGiladi. And of course Yiftach is born, and he runs into some trouble with his family, and he runs away to Eretz Tov, and he gathers over there. When the Jews realize the perilous situation they're in, they send a group of Zkenim from Gilad to go speak to Yiftach. And Yiftach's response to them is, "Why do you come to me? V'atem s'nei samosi, v'atishalchun mi'vesavi. You hate me. That's why you sent me away from my father's house." And so the question has to be raised. It wasn't the Zekanim who kicked him out. It was his brothers. So why does Yiftach blame the Zekanim? So the Dibna Magid explains that when someone has a chance to stand up for what's right and punts on that chance, so then the Avera becomes attributed to him. And Yiftach was making this clear to the Zekanim. You could have stood up for me, but you didn't. And since you didn't stand up for me, the Avera is on your head as well. Sometimes in life we see things that are wrong, but we say to ourselves we really don't feel like we are the ones who are able to stand up. We have a responsibility to do so, and if we were to take advantage of the opportunity, we would be able to grow. That was, after all, one of the tainus that Bar Kamsa made towards the Zekanim, and we know, unfortunately, that that didn't end well for our people. But we hope for a better end when we learn our lessons and we get to the Yom Shekula O Shabbos Umnucha L'Chayei Olamim Shabbat Shalom to all.